Yesterday we took a serious look at the fall and what happened at the fall and how it still affects us. Anyway, first, so, and I get everybody agreed about what the fruit of the fall was. The loss of innocency.
Doesn't sound like good fruit. Sounds like a sour fruit. But I guess that's.
It's what now?
Doesn't sound like good fruit. Sounds like sour fruit, but that's the fruit of the fall.
Yeah. Remember, the fruit that they ate is called an apple because that's a long story. But anyway. It was really a pomegranate, and it had the I don't know. According to legend, the pomegranates, when they're originally formed, had 613 seeds, each one of them, and so they represented the law, and that in eating of the you needed. It appeared that you needed some law, someone, at least something, to be tested by, or else the fall couldn't have occurred. Now that's what we're gonna look at the next one. Then it's tested without any law whatsoever, and that let's see what the fruit of that is. Okay. Let's go to Genesis 6. Well, after the fall, they were expelled from the garden. Then Cain and Abel were born. Cain slew Abel. Cain was cursed. And then the next chapter 5 of Genesis are the descendants of Cain and then the descendants of Adam. And then in chapter 6, and it came to pass when men began to multiply in the face of the earth, and daughters were born unto them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, and they were fair, and they took them wives, of all that which they chose. And the Lord said, My spirit shall not always strive with man, for that he also is flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. And there were giants in the earth in those days. And also after that, when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare children to them, the same became mighty men, which were of old, men of renown. And God saw the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And it repented the Lord that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him at his heart. And the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, and creeping thing, and the fowls of the air, for it repenteth me that I have made them. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Now, again, from many Jewish sources, including both the Jerusalem and the Babylonian Talmuds, Midrash, all over the place. The offspring of the sons of God with the daughters of men were giants. So we're going to take a look at these giants and see what happens when there is no law at all, And that's what happened here. So let's go to
sons of God that made it with the with these women. What's that mean?
They were of the evil one. They were
angels.
They were angels, but they were not good angels. They were this. excuse me. They were the tribe of Lucifer, the offspring of the evil one. So let's see what it says about them. There's two words in Hebrew that are translated as giants, and one is Rapha, R-A-P-H-A. Plural of that is Rephaim. So let's look and see about these giants, guys. And then we'll come back to the flood and Noah. But let's go to Genesis 6, verse, well, we just did that, Genesis 6, 4. Now to Genesis 14. This is the preamble to the Battle of the Kings. So let's read it. Chapter 14, verse 1. And it came to pass in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Elasar, Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of nations, that these made war with Bera, king of Sodom, and with Bersha, king of Gomorrah, and Sinab, king of Admah, and Shemeber, king of Zeboiim, and the king of Bela, which is Zoar. All these were joined together in the valley of Siddim, which is the Salt Sea. 12 years they served Chedorlaomer. 13th year they rebelled. And in the 14th year came Chedorlaomer and the kings that were with him and smote the Rephaim, and the Rephaim are the giants, in Ashkelon. So that's just the first word, the Rephaim, the first mention of the giants. Now let's go to Deuteronomy 2, the second message of giants. The first was Genesis 6. Now we go to Deuteronomy chapter 2. Remember what Deuteronomy means. Okay, don't say it. I know Pete does. He's done in town. You know?
Second law.
Right. Because they'd been in the wilderness for 40 years. And now they, as they were coming into the land, they needed to hear the law again. Okay?
What chapter?
Chapter 2. We're going to read verse 11 and 20. This talks about their journey in the wilderness. Well, let's go ahead and start in verse 1. Remember, Israel, it should have taken the time from the Passover to the time of Feast of Tabernacles. I'm sorry, I'm not doing well here. For the journey to have taken place. Because all they would have done is they would have left Egypt, they would have hit Mount Sinai, and then they would have just gone straight up to Canaan, or what is Jerusalem, and it would have been just a journey of a couple months at most. But what? They didn't go that way. They were led of God to go so that it took them 40 years instead of maybe 4 months. And the reason they spent a year getting to this one place, and then 39 years they spent in this one place. And the one place was called, anybody remember?
Kadesh Barnea.
And in Hebrew, Kadesh is sanctuary and Barnea is in the wilderness. So it's the sanctuary in the wilderness. They spent 39 years there before they sent the spies into Canaan. Now why? Why did God do that? Because they all had cell phones and they wouldn't get rid of them, so. Anybody know why God did that? There would have been no test if they just went straight. So they had to be tested in the wilderness.
And also, they sent spies, and the spies came back with a bad.
Well, that was after they reached Canaan. Yeah. So the thing that happened was the wilderness, and the purpose of the wilderness was to can't text and drive at the same time, and you shouldn't text and do the Bible study at the same time.
Well, I've got the standing around.
We'll take a brief coffee sip. It's the same as the test of Christ, and it's the same as a test in us. It's for them, they were totally and completely out of it. It took 39 years for the test. For Christ, it just took whatever it was. And for us, it takes maybe 39 or 40 or 50 years. And all the time, Israel believed they had reached the promised land in their minds. This was the sanctuary in the wilderness. We're settled down here. Same as us. If we don't enter into his test, and we just are messing with our tests, then we're still staying at Kadesh Barnea. And we think we've gotten to Jerusalem. Anybody understand that?
To bring it home a little bit, is this block the sanctuary in the wilderness?
Do what?
Would this block be a type of the sanctuary in the wilderness?
Yeah, right now. Yeah.
The church.
And that sanctuary in the wilderness then is another test, because it's the test of whether you believe there is a promise or you think you believe it, but you're settled at Kadesh Barnea. The parable that I've used many times is that the sperm cell goes up the canal and it stops and decides that's a good place and this must be the promise, and they build a city there. And they think they're for sure that they're still in God's will. They truly believe that everything is just as it's supposed to be. Yeah, everything is what it's supposed to be, because they're going to be destroyed. the only place that you can go, both us as individuals and us as a community, is that we must join with that egg of the New Jerusalem, so that that individuality that is part of each one of us would be swallowed up in a new creation. But until we reach that place, we believe all kinds of crap. But the only place that the transformation takes place isn't in the world or Babylon or isn't in Kadesh Barnea. The only place the transformation takes place is in the New Jerusalem, where your individual identity is swallowed up and forgotten, and never, as if it never existed. That's what it means. That's what this whole Bible is about. That's why Jerusalem, the New Jerusalem, is called the mother of us all. But we are all, from the standpoint of God, whether we're male or female doesn't matter, because there is no more male or female, bond or free, Greek or Jew, young or old. There is only the bride and the whore. The whore thinks she's reached the mystery. But her whole life is one of fornication, going someplace other than faith for what you think you need in life. And so somehow God's got to kick our butts so that we don't believe the lies, and that lie of the evil one is taking place constantly in this whole trip. You don't care whether you believe in God or not. That's not an issue to the evil one. The issue is, will you reach the egg? Will you, as the sperm cell, reach the egg of the New Jerusalem so you're transformed into something totally different than you started out as? Does that communicate to anybody? God, if it is, there's no such thing. There isn't. Either everything is spiritual or nothing is. You understand that? For you, everything must be spiritual. But you can't spiritualize the natural. Well, it always means to think you arrived when you haven't reached the New Jerusalem. So you spiritualize whatever you think is right, and you think it's spiritual. Does that communicate?
It'd be kind of like religion.
Huh?
It'd be kind of like a good religion, you know.
Even a bad religious.
Or any religion.
All right. Remember, there's only from Luther's standpoint, from I'm not doing well. From the book, the guy that wrote the book on being a theologian of the cross, what I had.
Gerhard Ford,
Ford. It's pronounced Ford. Ford, but
Ford, okay.
What's happening here is I'm trying to talk, and all of a sudden I get this monster pain thing, and it just wipes out what I've been talking about in my mind. I can't complete a sentence. That's pretty strange. From the standpoint of Luther, everything is a religion. And that's what Gerhard Ford wrote about in the Theology of the Cross. And he called the truth, there's only two religions. One is the theology of the cross, and the other is the theology of glory. And it doesn't matter whether it's finance, or philosophy, or psychology, or engineering, or mathematics. Everything falls into one of those two. It's either the theology of the cross or the theology of glory. And so the theology of the cross sees it only as when you've entered the New Jerusalem, and you know it when you have, because your whole outlook, everything changes. But the theology of glory, whatever it is always in the bottom, as a bottom line, is something to benefit you, either by finding something new or doing something well or whatever it is. It's the idea of, it all ends up in benefiting you. Even the good deeds end up in benefiting you so the theology of the cross comes across all of that and says the world must be crucified unto you and you must be crucified unto the world. That's the only way you've reached the New Jerusalem. You haven't reached there because it says you're there. Because it doesn't say you're there. It says the end of the process is there. You understand that? So now we've got this, we're and I've wasted a whole half hour here. But what we are faced with now, and this all ties into what we're studying, is we've now got a society without the law, without any kind of law. And that's what we're looking at. And again, that's why we're studying the giants, but we'll have to get that tomorrow when I feel better. But what I want you to understand and see is you're not there until you're there. Your only purpose right now in life is to be swallowed up in the egg of the New Jerusalem, the mother of us all. That's what everything is. That's what born again means. It's not something that can be done. It's something that every step of the way has to have been repentance. Otherwise, you will reach a point somewhere below it and think you're there. Does that communicate?
You say swallowed up in the egg of what?
Well, it's the egg of the mother. That's just the same as in a birth canal.
Yeah, so basically, that's about me dying.
It's about you not even thinking about whether you exist or not, or whether you're doing anything right or not. It's the total abandonment of you. Because you, the old identity, has been swallowed up in the egg. Just as a sperm cell, when it reaches the egg, is swallowed up so it doesn't have any reference to the past. Now, the only thing that's referenced is you have to be of the same order. In other words, you genetically, you have to have now been of the same genetics, if you will, as the egg is. Otherwise, you'll be expelled by the egg. And the only thing that's the same genetics as the egg is that which came from God. It's only that which came from God can return to God. It's only that he which came from heaven can return to heaven. We can't. We didn't come there. So it's this mystery of the sperm, as the sperm of Christ, if you will, entering the egg of the New Jerusalem, and now we're producing a new thing. And the new thing is the bride. And the bride has made herself ready. That's why the spotting of the garment is so critical. If the garment, which is his righteousness alone, if it has any, the merest slightest spot on it, then it's not eligible. And the only way that can happen, is that you be swallowed up as an identity. And each step in the process of the egg moving up the birth canal, that's all the world is the birth canal. In this analogy. And at every juncture, repentance is necessary. Otherwise, the garment will be spotted by the flesh. Automatically. Everybody understand this kind of weird metaphor we've been using this morning?
It's a good one.
Yeah. All right, take it big guy. We'll get more. We'll get to giants tomorrow. I said take it big guy, but I said it again.